Peter B. Collins, News and Comment, Thursday, December 19th, 2013. Barack Obama and Vladimir Putin are letting people out of prison. Tis the season for a little clemency.
Tonight there's gonna be a jailbreak somewhere in this town. See, me and the boys, we don't like it, so we're getting up and going down. Tonight there's gonna be a jailbreak somewhere in the town. Tonight there's gonna be a jailbreak, so won't you be around?
Well, it's not quite that simple. Not going to be a jailbreak, and it won't be tonight. But eight Americans who were sentenced to, in some cases, life terms, but at least 15 years under draconian laws regulating crack cocaine, are having their sentences shortened by President Obama. And this is exceptionally good news for a man named Clarence Aaron. 1993, at the age of 22, he got involved in a drug deal. First time he'd ever been caught. And 20 years later, he languishes in prison. And the one thing that President Obama didn't note in commuting these individuals, and by the way, he's expected to pardon 13 others who have already completed their sentences, is that his Vice President Joe Biden played a singular role in enacting the legislation after the death of basketball star Len Bias that made crack five times more, made the penalties five times greater for crack than for powder cocaine. And it didn't take long to discover that this disparity was affecting African Americans far more than suburban white guys who were using blow. And I want to single out Deborah J. Saunders, who is a conservative newspaper columnist at the San Francisco Chronicle. And I don't agree with Deborah on many, many things. But to her credit, she has been advocating for Clarence Aaron since Bush was president. She's kept up the pressure. She even exposed some misdeeds in the clemency department, the pardon department over at the Justice Department. And so, Deborah, take a victory lap this one. You earned, and I'm very, very pleased to see Clarence Aaron will be going home in somewhere about 60 or 90 days. The other people, let's name names. Reynolds Wintersmith of Rockford, Illinois. He was sentenced to life in prison from the age of 17 for dealing crack. Stephanie George, Pensacola, Florida, got a life sentence when she was 27 for hiding a boyfriend's stash of crack in a box in her house. And it is just about time. I mean, it's been sad to see these people remaining jailed. Even the sentencing judges generally said, no, my hands are tied and I hate this. It's flatly unfair. And as you may know, in many cases, the actual violator would take a plea bargain and implicate, say, a girlfriend, who would end up getting an extensive sentence. And the actual criminal might get a few years. This led to an 800% increase in the number of prisoners in the United States. We only have 5% of the world's population, but 25% of prison inmates at the state and federal level. The others receiving commutations, Azel Gilbert, Tampa, Florida, has been serving a 24-year sentence since 97. Helen Alexander Gray of Tie-Tie, Georgia, got a 20-year ride in 1996. Jason Hernandez of McKinney, Texas, who was sentenced to life in 98. And he's going to be released first of this group. Ricky Eugene Patterson, Fort Pierce, Florida, got a life sentence in 95. And Billy Ray Wheelock of Belton, Texas, who was sentenced to life all the way back in 1993. Now, when we put this in perspective, Barack Obama is still the stingiest president in recent history with his unfettered pardon powers. He could be pardoning Ed Snowden. He could be pardoning my friend Roger Shuler. who is wrongfully held at the Shelby County Jail in Alabama and is likely going to spend Christmas there, and that pains me a great deal. And while I fully support the commutation for these 8 individuals and the pardons for the 13 others, there are many more who remain behind bars over the issues of the war on some drugs. And I just want to remind you, my interview with Dr. Carl Hart is now available for all, subscribers or not. And he is the guy who teaches at Columbia University, used to sell weed on the streets of Miami. And he makes the point that chemically there's very little difference between crack and powder cocaine. There's very little difference between the meth that is cooked up in mobile homes around the country and the drug Adderall, which is prescribed to people with ADHD or if they just need to stay awake. And so this is a baby step toward rational thinking about drug and incarceration policies in this country. But the amnesty is spreading in advance of the Sochi Olympics. Vladimir Putin is trying to burnish his image and that of Russia. So he got the Duma to pass an amnesty bill that applies to the 30-member crew of the Greenpeace ship that was detained after an Arctic protest, the members of Pussy Riot, those two women who've been in jail for their punk band performance at a cathedral in Moscow, and 2,000 other people are expected to be released from jail in Russia over the next few weeks. And one of the most prominent people behind bars is Mikhail Khodorkovsky, former chief executive of Yukos Oil. Many people consider him a political prisoner because as one of the new plutocrats, he challenged Putin. Putin gave him a long sentence. He's already done 10 years. And Putin is making noises about pardoning him or giving him a commutation. He said his mother is ill, and I think that a decision can be taken in the near future. A decree on his clemency will be signed. I'd like to thank the people who support my work here at peterbcollins.com, and it is the holiday season, so I'd like to extend my thanks and also invite you, if you're not currently a subscriber, to join the ranks that include great Americans like Janet Price. She pays more than she has to. So does Kathleen Emmer, who voluntarily triples her monthly subscription amount to the PBC show. Susan Gavet has been on board for a long time, as has Gary Washington. And I really appreciate that. If you'd like to join them, go to my website, peterbcollins.com, under the picture of me in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage. Click on the link that says sign up. Takes you a couple of minutes. You go to PayPal, select $5 a month, $10, $15 if you like. Or the best deal is our annual $50 subscription. And right now, I've got a limited number of bonus books, the powerful new book called Goliath by Max Blumenthal. And I invite you to listen to that interview when you find the time during your holiday break, because there's a lot of important information there. Now, the other way you can support our efforts is just a few clicks and you take out a trial month-long subscription to audible.com. With that, you get your first download audiobook free. They have 150,000 titles to choose from. You can download them to your iPhone, Android, Kindle, MP3 player, whatever gizmo you use. And when you sign up for that free 30-day trial, audible.com will pay me $15. You can even cancel within 30 days and it won't cost you a penny. It's a no-risk, no-cost way you can kick in $15 to support this podcast and get a free audiobook in the process. Just follow the link in the show file or the banner ad that's on the left-hand column of the homepage at peterbcollins.com. Now, I'm not finished yet with these stories about people winning their freedom right here just before the Christmas holiday. And movie actor Sean Penn, who used to live in my neighborhood, is a behind-the-scenes star. I guess he's a director in this case. In the release of American Jacob Ostreicher from Bolivia. Ostreicher has been held there for several years now. And Sean Penn took an interest in his case. Ostreicher was jailed as part of a money laundering investigation into a rice-growing venture. And last year, Penn traveled to Bolivia and directly appealed to President Evo Morales. And what's curious here is that the Associated Press reports no one is saying how this man fled or who helped him. And Peter Hakim, the President Emeritus of the Inter-American Dialogue in Washington, said, "You'll never find out. It was done through layers and layers of cover." Well, good on you, Sean Penn. And as I mentioned, Sean used to live near me. I ran into him one day at the bank. He was in front of me in line, and I tried to chat him up. He wasn't very friendly. And lately, I don't watch this crap, but somebody told me that there's a TMZ video of somebody who provoked Sean Penn. I guess it was a setup where one guy went and kind of triggered his temper, which doesn't take that much. And two other people were there with their phones, capturing it on video. And Penn performed as they expected. They probably got $500 or $1,000 from TMZ for the footage. And so there's that side of Sean Penn I can't help you with. I can't help myself with. But I will say that he is a tremendous character actor, and that he's a man of some deep character. Because when you talk to people who care about Haiti, and who talk about those who stayed after the cameras left, following the earthquake there in January a few years back, the name Sean Penn is the one most often mentioned. He has stayed with the struggles there in Haiti, much to his credit. Now, with all of this freedom breaking out, the United States, Russia, a couple of guys went home to Saudi Arabia from Guantanamo yesterday. There's one guy who hasn't gotten the message. Former CIA Director James Woolsey was appearing with the Joint Chiefs of Staff General Hugh Shelton. I think that's former. When he proclaimed that Snowden should be prosecuted for treason, and if convicted by a jury of his peers, he should be hanged by his neck until he is dead. Well, James Woolsey just soiled himself with that commentary, because the consensus, even of the hand-picked insiders, many with intelligence community backgrounds, who were part of the 5-member panel, asked by the president to make recommendations about reform of our spying system, all of this, of course, provoked by Ed Snowden's disclosures. Number one, they tell us that the collection of our phone records, the metadata, has not produced a single case where they can prove that it broke up a plot or prevented a crime from occurring. Not a single case. We wouldn't know that if Ed Snowden hadn't taken the risks, the personal risks that he did. And let me tell you that overall, the 46 recommendations of this panel are all moves in a good direction, but not a single one of them goes far enough for me. And this is getting publicity before the holidays. That'll die down. Obama goes to Hawaii for a couple of weeks, says he's going to read this 300-page report. And then he's going to let us know in the State of the Union address what he is willing to consider in terms of legislative reforms. Now, separate from him, there are members of Congress, starting with Rush Holt, including Adam Schiff of California, who have serious reform bills that may pass in the next session. And Feinstein's phony reform bill in the Senate is DOA. And as timid and as much of insider talk as we're getting from this report, it offers important acknowledgments about what I have been talking about for years. Ever since Mark Klein disclosed to me and others about the secret room at AT&T in San Francisco, where the NSA was diverting all the telephone and internet traffic. And first, let's look at who is on the hand-picked panel selected by President Obama. All right. Up first, Cass Sunstein, the Harvard Law School professor who was a White House fellow and is still married to an administration official, UN Ambassador Samantha Power. How cozy is that? Cass Sunstein is the guy who famously has attacked those of us who have doubts about the official story of 9/11, those of us who attack the whitewash that was performed by the 9/11 Commission, as nutballs who need to be dealt with harshly. Jeffrey Stone, a University of Chicago law professor, a former colleague of Obama's. Michael Morell, a former deputy CIA director. Now, none of those people would go sideways on Obama. Peter Swire served earlier on Obama's National Economic Council. Richard Clark is the only one, and his integrity is not pristine, let me tell you that, but he's the only one who I have some respect for as being remotely objective about the overreach of the NSA programs. And so we have these 46 recommendations, and they say that they want to, instead of having the NSA collect the metadata, they want the phone companies to hold it, and NSA has to get a warrant to go get it from the phone companies. That's a distinction without much difference. They have no goddamn business collecting the phone records in the first place, because it makes a suspect out of hundreds of millions of innocent people. And that is flatly forbidden by the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution. And so when they talk about rearranging these deck chairs, it's encouraging that they acknowledge the problem. But the proposed fixes, including tweaks to the FISA court, that will not end the secret nature of its proceedings, the secret nature of its rulings. I'm sorry, I can't accept tweaks to programs that are flatly unconstitutional, to processes that are clearly un-American. And so when they propose putting a public interest advocate to represent the interests of privacy and civil liberties before the FISA court, I say no. Putting a kangaroo who may represent my interests into a secret kangaroo court proceeding doesn't change what it is. And one of the proposals is that currently the Chief Justice, John Roberts, is the only one who gets to appoint members to the FISA court. And they say, well, let's let each justice on the Supreme Court name somebody to the FISA court. Well, that doesn't fix the problem. And it is this kind of window dressing, these kinds of cosmetic changes, that I fear, like the Feinstein bill that came out of the Intelligence Committee, will really be used to maintain these programs that violate our constitutional rights. And that's why, let me reiterate, I have a simple three-point fundamental program. The NSA must be reined in to its original mission, spying on people outside the United States. Number two, the FISA court must be shut down, completely disbanded. Number three, it's getting late for this one, we need to fire the liars. Clapper and Alexander should not be permitted to retain their jobs when it is proven that they have lied under oath to the United States Congress. And Colleen Rowley pointed out to me in a recent Boiling Frogs interview that, well, you get rid of those jokers, they have other people who are probably worse. Maybe so. But we still have to maintain minimum standards that if you lie under oath, you can't keep your job. All right, I'll calm down now. Google has reported a sharp rise in the number of requests from governments asking for political content to be removed from the web in the past year. A 68% increase, a total of about just under 4,000 total government requests. And what's fascinating is the U.S. is number two. Turkey is the number one nation demanding that Google remove political content that the government objected to. 1,600 requests for 12,000 items. U.S., 545 requests for 3,800 items. Brazil, number three. Russia, number four. India, number five. And at least this gives us some idea of what actions governments are taking to control speech, to limit what we see. And here's something that could set an example for the United States of America. In Britain, the Gibson Inquiry, whose report is actually just a series of questions, and that report has been withheld for more than a year, kind of like the CIA Senate Intelligence Torture reports. Well, they finally succeeded, the people who've operated the Gibson Inquiry, in getting their report released. Like I said, it's really just a series of questions, 27 of them. Gosh, that reminds me of Arlo Guthrie in Alice's Restaurant. 27 8x10 color glossy photographs with pictures and arrows. So, the 27 questions relate to Britain's conspiring or collusion with the United States to kidnap people and use what is called rendition. You put them on a private jet and haul them someplace where they'll be tortured. Syria, Egypt were favorite spots back in 2002, 2003. Britain allowed us to overfly their airspace. They collaborated with us on the picking up of British citizens. They participated in the interrogation and torturing, or at least were present as Americans tortured British citizens. And so the questions put to the spy agencies MI5 and MI6 include, did UK intelligence officers turn a blind eye to specific inappropriate techniques or threats used by others? Who would those others be? If so, was a deliberate or agreed policy there between officers of the UK and overseas intelligence? Overseas? Who would that be? Did the government and its agencies become inappropriately involved in some renditions? Involved with whom? Well, the answers to all my rhetorical questions are the U.S. government and, more explicitly, the Central Intelligence Agency. And while this report has now been referred to a secret intra-parliamentary committee called the Intelligence and Security Committee that only operates in secret, and that's probably where this whole thing will go to die, it also could produce further investigation that would inevitably lead to Americans. And it would blow up Barack Obama's looking forward, not backward policy of obstruction of justice of the war crimes of the preceding administration, some of which may have continued under Obama. There have been some renditions. And let me correct myself. I said the report was completed a year ago. It was actually 18 months ago, when a member of parliament named Gibson resisted government attempts to censor significant portions of the work. And that, of course, was probably at the behest of the Obama administration, trying to maintain the cover-up and the obstruction of any investigation or prosecution for clear war crimes that occurred. A little bit of good news. I was surprised to learn about this, and I'm happy to share it with you. The Associated Press reports that in the fine print of the bipartisan budget deal that includes funding for the military next year, the Obama administration scored a little bit of a victory, because the Senate forced compromised legislation that removed the limitation on the president releasing prisoners to countries other than the United States from Guantanamo. And as I speak to you on Thursday, today we released an interview in the Processing Distortion series, a podcast series, over at BoilingFrogsPost.com with Jason Leopold, who just returned from a week of reporting at Guantanamo, and a constitutional lawyer named Dr. Robert Wagstaff, who's just published a book about U.S. and Britain's torture policies. And at that point, we didn't know about this, and we talked about how the congressional restrictions still preclude bringing prisoners to the United States for trial, for incarceration, even for medical care. They're not allowed to touch American soil on the mainland. And these are crackpot restrictions imposed by the Congress. Nevertheless, the president had a way to override that with the waiver system, and the four men who have been released since May from Guantanamo, not one of them was released under that waiver program. There are now 82 who are cleared for release and still chilling at Guantanamo. And hopefully this will set the stage for more releases in the very near future. As we get ready to hunker down for the holidays, violence is continuing around the world. In the Syrian civil war, government jets continued their airstrikes and killed more than 200 people in the city of Aleppo. And the violence in Africa continues. Central African Republic has been a flashpoint recently. But in South Sudan, at least 500 people, most soldiers, have been killed since Sunday. The clashes are pitting soldiers from the majority Dinka tribe of President Kiir against those from ousted Vice President Riek Machar's Nuer ethnic group. And this is, I'm not really up to speed on the details of this conflict, but 19 civilians have been killed as well. This has been a very bad year for reproductive rights, for abortion rights, and for women's health care rights in general. And the Center for American Progress compiled a list of the most dastardly deeds to women's health freedom that occurred in the past year. Let me run them down for you. North Dakota and Arkansas have approved the harshest abortion bans in the nation with a 12-week limit. And North Dakota enacted a 6-week abortion ban, outlawing the procedure at a point before many women even realize they're pregnant. Now, both governors who signed these bills know that they are not constitutional currently. And this is a way to provoke the Supreme Court into reviewing the Roe versus Wade decision. Texas passed a sweeping law that's forced a third of the state's clinics to shut down, and more will have to be closed unless appeals put the new law on hold or put any restrictions on it. In South Dakota, they have the nation's longest abortion waiting period. You have to wait 72 hours before you're allowed to have an abortion. And in most other states where they even have a waiting period, it's 24 hours. And this creates a real problem because in some of these states, women have to travel very long distances to a clinic. So you have to go and you know, be checked out, and then you have to come back 3 days later if you want to follow through with an abortion. And studies have proven that mandatory waiting periods don't actually influence women's decisions at all, but it makes white males who pass these bad laws feel better. Abortion opponents consistently refuse to make exceptions for rape victims, and this is virtually across the board in laws that are drafted and promoted by the murky group ALEC. Mississippi's governor tried to end abortion for good in the state and admitted it. That's Republican Governor Phil Bryant. And they use these, pretextual regulations that an abortion doctor has to have admitting privileges at a local hospital. And then, of course, they pass laws that don't allow local hospitals to offer admitting privileges to abortion doctors. Isn't that clever? They think so. And finally, state lawmakers pulled out all the stops to sneak through unpopular anti-choice laws. Texas, again, is the best example. And Governor Rick Perry called multiple sessions over the summer. You'll remember that Wendy Davis was able to filibuster one of those sessions, and then they just kept after it until they prevailed. And finally today, I get some strange communications in my email account And this is one of the weirdest. It came from Liz Cheney, daughter of the former vice president, now a candidate for the Republican Senate nomination from the state of Wyoming, where she hasn't lived for decades. Yes, she carpet-bagged into Wyoming. And her parents have been busy pissing off Alan Simpson and other elders of the state Republican Party there as she takes on Mike Enzi. And this is just so rich. When you see Republicans fighting each other, you don't know who to cheer for. So the letter reads, "Friend." It's not even dear. It's just friend. "Just recently, a shadowy out-of-state super PAC launched a dishonest smear campaign to distort my record, and the National Republican Senatorial Committee partnered with my opponent to raise money to try to stop us. This is the same Washington establishment that endorsed Democrat Charlie Crist over Marco Rubio." Well, no, Liz, this is the same Washington establishment that your daddy was a major player in for years. Liberal Republican senators, I love this line, liberal Republican senators like John McCain and Olympia Snowe. Now, Snowe is moderate on occasion. McCain is called liberal here? And Liz Cheney says, "We must be doing something right if these folks are fighting so hard to preserve the status quo." So, the status quo is a hardline right-winger named Mike Enzi. And to Liz Cheney, changing the status quo is to roll things back to the 1950s. She, of course, doesn't approve of same-sex marriage, and her sister, Mary, is a lesbian who's married. That's just one of the little inconvenient aspects of the Liz Cheney for Senate campaign, and I just hope we get to watch this one go down in flames. It would warm my heart. Happy holidays to you. Dare I say Merry Christmas. Thanks for listening. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.